Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Happy Hour. It's HR and Happy Hour. We're all drinking. Are you? I'm Kat Johnson. I'm here with my co-host, Katie Mosman-Wadler.
Hey, guys.
And in the studio, we have today Patrick Martins.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Who is a guest slash co-host.
Oh, wow. Upgrade.
You're moving up.
I've been upgraded.
You're moving up.
I got
slashed
up.
We also have Cynthia Cherish Malaron.
I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here.
DJ Cherish the Love.
Stick around because I'm on at 6.
Yeah. She's a host of Primary Food. Stay tuned for that show after us. We'll try to get out of here in time. But
okay.
Yeah, we'll definitely get out of here in time.
You'll definitely get out of there on time.
It'll be your fault.
You're here now, so you can just like literally push us out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then our special guest today is Chef Mario LaPosta from Babbo Pizzeria in Boston.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Babbo.
Pizza, pizza, pizza.
Patrick, you're amazing. Love the relationship with Heritage Foods.
Ah, very nice. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
Yes, that actually works against you
with
at this
Patrick
network.
Sometimes.
So is everybody doing good?
Great.
Yo, Babbo is a real, that's like, when you say Babbo, that's a legit thing to drop. When you're like, I'm the chef of the restaurant, and they're like, what's it called? And you're like, Babbo?
Babbo Pizzeria.
No, I know, but still, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that
still
Babbo?
A Babbo.
Yeah.
There's not that many Babbos around.
That's true.
There's a restaurant started like down the block from Babbo called Bobo, and I know they were just trying to get like stupid tourists to go there.
Is that for real?
Yep, Bobo.
In New York?
Yeah.
Is it still open?
Bobo. No.
Their target demographic is confused tourists.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, anybody else have any personal news before we jump into HRN headlines?
Let's jump in.
Personal news?
Oh, yeah, what's
David.
Up?
No, I got nothing. Go ahead.
Oh.
I was just wondering about that. Okay.
Go. We want headlines.
Ready? Okay. This is going to be rapid-fire headlines.
Go. You guys go.
Ready, set, go.
Ready? I'm waiting for my news music.
David.
Oh, yeah.
I put this in the script.
This is the time when we talk about our fabulous
I gave you a script.
Engineer, studio engineer, David Tadashore. Who, when we provide him with the materials, is usually right on cue.
He usually loves to play the sound effect.
Well, you know, it's great when you provide me with the materials like minutes before the start of the show.
Okay, starting with beer.
Like
there
beer.
We go.
Yeah.
On Femin About It, Chris Kuzme recaps his adventures at the Craft Brewers Conference, while Beer Sessions Radio throws it back to Beer Week with a live panel recorded at The Well.
On other beverage fronts, the Grape Nation host Sam Ben Ruby interviews Dustin Wilson, who you may recognize from the documentary Psalm. Anyone seen it?
Yes.
Rachel Lowe, wine director of Spiaggia Restaurant in Chicago, joins Joe Campanelli on In the Drink, and Damon and Souther talk to Heather Ash of Tromba Tequila on The Speakeasy.
Damon, best bartender in the country.
Hey.
And Souther's just opening up Pooh in Cooper Square, donating all of their profits to charities, including the ACLU, SPLC. Awesome. Go check them out. They're open now.
That bar's going to be the shit.
It is.
Already is.
Maybe you're interested in something heavier than alcohol. Listen to Harry Rosenblum's interview with musician John DeRosa on Feast Your Ears to hear about his fascination with drinking ayahuasca in Peru.
Mm.
Bucket list, anybody? Because... yeah, me.
Yeah.
Yep.
On Love Bites, Jacqueline and Ben speak to Brian Kadiman. He's the author of The Reducitarian Solution, which urges us to limit our meat consumption to make our world healthier.
Ooh.
If you're like Patrick and limiting your meat sounds like torture, tune into this week's Japan Eats to hear how the Japanese Wagyu became the world's best beef. And speaking of beef, on What Doesn't Kill You, Katie Kiefer asked the question, what effect would a 21% cut to the USDA have on young farmers?
Thank God I was chewing Induja while you said that, and I didn't hear what
Induja.
I just read on the script.
Induja?
Induja, sorry.
Induja is how I like to pronounce it.
And keeping it animal focused, Celia Kutcher got catty on Animal Instinct this week with Pam Johnson Bennett, a feline behaviorist and author of Catwise, otherwise known as the Cat Bible. So anybody looking to train their cats, that's the show to listen to.
All right. On Cutting the Curd, host Diane Stemple speaks to Dr. Catherine Donnelly, an expert on the microbiological safety of food, about how not to get sick when you eat cheese.
I've been there. It sucks.
All right.
This is a quiz question. Quiz question. What is an episode with Diane Stemple called?
A Stempisode.
Yes.
Nailed it. And on the Farm Report season finale, Aaron Fairbanks welcomes Whole Foods co-founder and CEO, John Mackey.
Who? Who?
John Mackey.
Wow. CEO. She got John Mackey?
The big gun.
It's a big get.
How did you get? How did she? Why am I in the bubble? That's huge. Aaron's
Whole Foods is a sponsor.
A big deal.
Wow.
And Aaron Fairbanks
are they currently?
Really they are. They are.
David, did you record that show?
I think I forgot to record that one, actually.
Oh, no, but I'm saying, was it a legitimate? That's legit. Was he in studio?
Yeah, he was
here. Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd recorded it.
Yeah. Also, we have more Whole Foods news.
I am officially the Whole Foods New York City DJ.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
When can we see you at Bryant Park?
Bryant Park every first Tuesday, 6 to 8.
Very nice.
So if you're like me and you can't shop without some bomb-ass tunes, that's when you should go. So, changing gears. Do you guys have a huge following on Instagram? I don't. But if you do, this week's Tech Bites can help you learn how to protect your intellectual property on social media.
Yeah, I'm really worried about someone co-opting my photo of an alligator that I saw in Florida.
That was so
weird.
Cat
knows all about alligators.
I posted a photo on Instagram and said, porcelain toilets, nice and shiny. What lies beneath will bite your hiney. And it was a picture of an alligator.
Jesus, Patrick.
So foul.
All right. So cooking issues this week was a doozy.
Are we still doing news?
Doozies, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't have to keep playing that.
No, I like it because it gives you a sense of urgency.
Okay, that's true.
We all sound nervous.
Well, Dave and Nastasia this week took a deep dive into bag juices, bag B-A-G, with guests Peter Meehan of the doomed Lucky Peach magazine and Ariel Johnson of the
failing,
MIT.
The failing BLM. Lucky Peach.
Not failing.
That's in the script because Pete Meehan called himself like the doomed Lucky Peach magazine.
Quote, doomed, unquote.
Lucky that is Peach a magazine. Tense situation over there.
He said it on the radio.
He was in good humor about it, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I feel, with this music, I feel like Wolf Blitzer, who doesn't even sit. He stands. He's so alarmist, so he can, like, run out of the studio faster.
That's because literally every story in CNN.
He's standing up now.
I'm standing up, but I have to hunch over to reach.
That's because literally every story on CNN is delivered like an air raid drill. It's absurd.
I'm sweating as we go through the news.
Okay. Okay.
All right, fine. I'm killing the music.
The summer reading. On the food scene, Michael Harlan Turkel introduces us to The New Worlder, a travel and food website that spotlights Latin America. Also, Linda Palacio welcomes guest Emmalyn Rood on A Taste of the Past to talk about a startup food history magazine on the horizon called Repast. By the way, you can donate to that Kickstarter now. And on Radio Cherry Bomb, Carrie speaks to Joan Nathan, author of many cookbooks, including Jewish Cooking in America.
Now, these have all been just this week?
Just this week.
Or are
just
you pulling from
wait,
the
wait.
Year?
This is just this week. Hold on. And we're going to end with a bang, because there's two more this week. The Front Burner actually had two killer episodes this week. On Monday, we released a special report from Jimmy and Andrew about the new documentary from Jeremiah Tower, The Last Magnificent. The interview featured Jeremiah himself, plus the film's director, Lydia Tenaglia, and executive producer, Anthony Bourdain. You may have heard of him. on Thursday, again, so two killer episodes this week. Thursday, the Front Burner's finale for the season featured an interview with Barbara Lynch, speaking of Boston chefs.
She was just featured in the New York Times food section yesterday.
True.
And she was at Cherry Bomb Jubilee. So they were talking about her memoir, the no-holds-barred memoir called Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire, which is about as revealing a book by a chef or anybody as you'll ever read. And I will say, so far I've only read the first chapter, but it is intense. You should all check it out.
Wow, that's very impressive. That was good. That was the best intro ever.
That's HR News.
I will say Barbara Lynch, what is she, 70, 65?
No, I think she's younger than that. She looks like she's 50.
She looked kind of hot in that photo, like smoking a cigarette in the New York Times, like with her foot up on the wall. Like, that was pretty cool. She looked cool. I thought they made her look hot.
She is cool.
Yeah, Barbara is, to me, I know her a little bit. She's a very independent person and is totally comfortable in who she is. And her restaurants and food are awesome. And she's... welcoming person who...
Do chefs hook each other up? Like, well, if she knows you were there or you knew she was there?
She comes into the restaurant pretty often, and she's just great. She's a big supporter, and we're a big supporter of hers.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was wonderful at Cherry Bomb Jubilee. If you stay tuned to Radio Cherry Bomb over the summer, we'll be releasing the recordings. And she was being interviewed during Jubilee, and she talked about introducing her daughter, who's, I believe, 7 or 13. She's a young daughter to the book, and her daughter is reading the book, and her daughter was like, Mom, do you know how inappropriate this is for, like, a kid my age to be reading? But the first chapter is really, it's really revealing, and Barbara just told her daughter, like, you know, ask me any questions you have about it. But, you know, really intense discussion about that coming out. So
happy 420. Wonderful. That reminds me. Yeah. Happy 420.
Happy 420.
Wait, we're getting to that in a second.
Oh.
Yeah, that's up later on the agenda.
My bad. Sorry, I didn't read the script. But it's
good to... We'll go with you, Patrick. Do you have any, like, other food news in the world that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I think global warming is happening. I'm pretty
you
sure.
You say that heard, every week.
Doesn't that have an effect on food?
The is longing that on for the weather Mike Edison report? Is so strong.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to him. I want to talk about one thing really quick before we talk about 420. Did anybody see the feature in the New York Times 2 days ago about the day in the life of a New York food vendor?
Yes.
Yes.
I loved that piece. It was just so well done, I thought.
It was a nice crossover piece talking about something they don't usually talk about.
Yeah, it was really good. And did you know that a day later, a reader thought that was... Because, you know, it talks about how he saves his money to send his wife and his kids to visit family in the summer. And, like, he doesn't even go. But this year, the wife was like, let's all go on a cruise together. And so a reader started a GoFundMe to send them all on a vacation.
Oh,
and they're, like,
nice.
Very close to the goal. I thought that was, like, very heartwarming and just, like, a really nice story.
Do you know the name of the Kickstarter so our listeners can...
I don't. But if you go to... If you find Sam Sifton on Twitter, he tweeted the link.
Yeah.
So
it's a really cool thing to do. And on HR and Happy Hour, we do like to shout out to great causes that you can donate to. Not only HRN, which is one of the top causes that you should be donating to.
Always.
But we like to give other shout outs to our friends as well.
Well, if I'm going to eat street meat, I'm going to eat from that dude's cart.
It looked really good, by the way.
It does. You know, I mean, those guys put a lot of effort into it. Think about it. It's one chef per person. I mean, you know, one chef making you a thing. I mean, that's pretty pretty unusual.
Yeah. I have a quick question for Patrick.
Go ahead, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Regarding global warming. Last night I was watching a documentary on HBO. Don't recall the name of it. And basically they were referring to global warming, and one of the ways to reduce global warming was to eat less meat as, you know, throughout the world. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I kind of like warm weather. I don't know about you guys. Do you like it when it's freezing? No,
I don't, but it's important.
I actually do believe that, you know, meat, you know, can be eaten, ground meat on pasta or an ounce of ground meat over a pizza is also a way to eat meat.
Right.
So, I, you know, I guess I do understand, you know, for me, meatless Mondays means no, like, 28-ounce ribeye.
Right. Doesn't have to be in excess.
No. I can have a little, you know, burrito with some ground pork in there, please.
I want to say something about that. I went to one of the Impossible Burgers events, where it's, like, obviously they're trying to scale back how much meat people eat, and they were saying...
Impossible Burger being a veggie burger that tastes and has a similar experience to eating a beef burger.
That is the goal. And it's the goal is to, you know, yeah, have people replace their meat with... plant-based foods. And the panel, someone on the panel made a interesting point that they think that meat will become more of a condiment, which is basically what you're saying is we'll eat less of it, but you'll still be able to have it in every meal.
Yeah. Well, meat has always been an issue. I mean, during Lent, I know the medieval, like, nobility always felt this pressure, and the church always tried to exert this pressure not to eat meat during certain holy holidays, which I think was, like, 1 or 2 days a week, plus all of Lent, plus all these other holidays. So the nobility used to instruct their court chefs to disguise fish to taste like meat.
Fish on Fridays.
And that kind of playing with food led to the wedding cake and food castles and marzipan sculptures and all that. So kind of playing with food and overcoming this desire to, you know, meat's always been talked about as something to avoid in one way or the other.
Well, you mentioned wedding cake, so I just have to pass the mic to DJ Cherish for a second.
Okay.
I think that she might have something to say on the subject.
On wedding cake?
Special announcement, possibly.
Are you getting married?
Preview? Yes. I'm getting married every week.
every week. Next season, I'll be starting my new show, Wedding Cake.
Wow.
So it's funny that you mentioned that. I'm going to Wikipedia that and find out what you were talking about, unless you just made that up and pulled
your
ass.
Sydney Mintz. You know Sydney Mintz wrote a thing on sugar. And no, the Wedding Cake, playing with food, building with food.
Fantastic.
Well, what's the wedding cake going to be about? Are we always wedding cakes, or is that like a metaphor?
I'm going to have people making me some gluten-free wedding cakes every week. Mm. I'm going to have wedding industry folks come in. I'm going to have a pretend fiancé or fiancé play my partner so we can have cake. And we're going to bitch and moan and plan and talk about like what's going on. And then eat the cake.
I love that. I'm going to start a show called Three Course Meal, where I invite chefs to come and cook me a three-course meal.
Patrick's dinner.
I'm going to start a recurring series about revolving sushi conveyor belts. Well, first of all, you heard it here first on HRN Happy Hour.
Very cool.
First preview of our summer lineup, Wedding Cake. And I'm also officially putting in my request to be your special fiancé 1 week.
Taster.
Yeah.
Fiancé.
Yeah. We're getting serious.
Here's the story. Like, my wedding, I am divorced, but I got married in Vegas. Total, like... Actually, it wasn't a shotgun wedding because I wasn't pregnant, but it was a machine gun wedding because we went to a firing range.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's a true story. Wow. Probably why we're not together anymore. But anyway, I didn't have cake. I didn't have the whole, wedding niceness. So I'm going to kind of like just relive it every week.
Wow, that's good. Getting married once a week.
12 episodes of it.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
That's cool.
Going back to the news, I actually also pulled a news story about street food. Mm-hmm. You guys may have seen this. It was Savour actually broke the news that Bangkok, Thailand, is going to ban street food by the end of this year.
What?
Which is crazy, right?
They're especially all based because, off of that, aren't
yeah,
they?
Like CNN just awarded Bangkok the title of best street food in the world for the second year in a row. So this is something that was really came as a shock to me. I've been to Bangkok. I love Thai food. I ate all my food basically on the street. The opening line of this article in Savour from April 18th was that people need to be saved from their own terrible ideas. That includes lawmakers, American lawmakers, British lawmakers, and even Thai lawmakers. So I think like this is a little bit of a case of, who are we to be judging the Thai rules, but it is, I think, a terrible loss. The Thai government is saying that their motives are cleanliness and safety, but critics have accused them of just trying to be more like Singapore.
Where you get lashed for like doing a street
gum?
Food, and, yeah,
yeah. So
terrible.
This is kind of a bummer of a headline. I'm sorry to say
that would affect their tourism.
Yeah, it's going to have a huge impact, I think. So better get there before 2017.
Get Bourdain's comment on that. I would like to hear on our news show what
Bourdain. Kate Crater spoke to him recently. Yeah, okay. I need to check that out.
Yeah, yeah. Find out.
He's
what
definitely
he
like being vocal about it.
And I have a consolation after that sad announcement, which is I got a press release today from the Royal Thai Consulate General. And they are going to be celebrating Songkran, Thai New Year, with a street festival, ironically.
Weird.
And they're actually giving away a trip to Thailand, which is cool. It's just like the irony of these two things coming out within 2 days of each other was just like a little...
Are you just on that mailing list randomly? What was it?
I guess. I don't know. Things are happening. I get emails now.
How many emails do you guys get? You guys must get hundreds of thousands of emails from
so
everybody
many
about
emails,
food.
But I try
millions,
to read all of them,
billions.
FYI.
Good.
So that's how I found this email about the Songkran Festival. It's in Woodside, Queens, and it's happening April 22nd, and I think it's happening all through the week, but the big days are April 22nd and 29th. Hmm. So it's going to include cultural performances, Muay Thai showcase, a Chang beer garden, cooking demos, and a competition, and most importantly, Thai street food booths. Yeah. Get it while you can. And you can always get it in Queens, so don't
the
worry
nature
about your
of that food.
Food. But you might have to get it in Queens instead of going to Bangkok.
Fair.
Wow. Well, the nature of that food is to eat it on the street. I mean,
yeah.
It's like egg rolls, right? Or wraps.
Yeah, and even like the noodle things you still would eat on the street. You get pad thai on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like really common.
But how are these people who are currently making their income going to be able to feed their kids and stuff like that, like if they don't have their businesses anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it really seems like a really kind of sad political situation that is you know, leading to this crackdown. You know, obviously, I think there are other motives besides the, you know, so-called health and cleanliness that they're going for. And obviously, that's a huge tourist attraction. It's a major employer, and it's a symbol of what Bangkok tourism is like. Yeah. So
yeah. They do strange things in some of these. I mean, it is a third world country, right? I don't know what that means, but crazy stuff happens in third world countries. I mean, where there's not, is there a democracy there? I mean, who's making these decisions? Is it like an oligarchy or what?
There was a military junta that took over in 2014.
Yeah. When you live in cultures like that, shit goes down like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too bad. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, but should we talk about something more?
Yeah, let's talk about something more.
Yeah, let me talk
and I really
more
think
about
there's like
politics.
Plenty of time. There's just,
happy
it takes effect the end of 2017, and really it only applies to like certain main streets. I think the headline is probably a little doom and gloom, but yeah. I'm going to remain optimistic. Sense.
Good.
Also, I haven't picked my honeymoon destination spot, but they might have gotten a down ranking because of that.
What are the Ooh. Top three? What are the top? Am I helping cater your wedding? Because no one organizes a group event. I don't need to be invited. But I do want to make sure you don't make
Patrick
any mistakes.
I think Patrick wants to be invited.
Patrick's like one big table for everybody.
Hey, you know what? Yes. I'm taking your advice. We might actually have two big tables because of logistics, but I would love that. Let's talk.
Okay.
We have it on air.
I don't want you to make mistakes.
I would
mistakes.
Love to talk, sure.
Let's talk off record.
Alice Waters taught me everything
Employee
I know
discount.
In that. Alice and I will get on the phone. We'll just create some
if
headlines
if you and Alice could plan
you.
My wedding, I actually, well, can I tell my personal news
with
real
hopefulness?
Quick?
Yeah.
So I missed.
Thank you, David.
I was not able to be on HR and Happy Hour last week because I was absurdly sick.
Wah, wah, wah.
And I just didn't want to gross anybody out with all my, like, sounds.
you know what? Ira Glass did a show of This American Life.
I
totally
remember that one. And he sounded terrible.
I
and
like,
I was uncomfortable the whole time.
Bad.
Is that
and
the one
like,
that he recorded
what?
In the bathroom?
I think. I don't remember. He's had a few where he's been like, guys, yeah. I'm not feeling really well.
Then, like, maybe wait a couple days and then record
right.
this.
So, but I just figured, like, I think Jordan was a great co-host to take my spot. So I was happy that you guys got to have a nice, healthy-sounding one. But anyway, last week I kind of sort of recovered. I dragged my ass to Maine, and I finally saw my wedding venue, which I'm so excited to have actually laid eyes on. Mm-hmm. And I went to the rental shop, and I got way too many ideas. And I went and hung out with my chef, who's doing the catering. Her name is Sarah Jenkins.
Oh, yeah. She's very famous.
She's awesome.
Andrew,
she's so sweet.
Andrew, Joanne Fleming's son, works with her.
Yeah. I have so many, like, connections to her, and it was so crazy that we had never met in person. But I went to her restaurant, 9 of June, in Rockport on Friday night. And we just had a lovely dinner, and she's so wonderful. And anyway, but I do have to talk to you about some...
Butter her up. Get her on the radio.
I do. I have to say...
A little nepotism.
I love you that know. Katie, like, goes into, like, wedding planning, like, food first. I, like,
well,
really
yeah.
respect
that's the way
that.
To do it.
What else is there?
Well, in the South, people are just like, okay, what mansion am I going to have it at? Like,
nope.
How
food,
big's
food
the tent?
Food and music. Food and music is all you need.
You're speaking yeah. the
By
truth,
the way,
David. You're speaking the truth.
I'm sorry. I Always remember did. That you're from the South. Your boy of Fox got ousted. I hope you are overcome.
Bill O'Reilly is not Cat's
not
boy.
My boy.
What?
No.
South.
No.
No.
No, thank
didn't
you.
Lyndon
no, that's Jeff Sessions, Alabama.
Didn't
oh,
Lyndon...
No.
Didn't Boo. Lyndon Johnson sign the... you know, Civil Rights Act and say I just handed the South to the Republicans?
I don't,
that's exactly
I don't know.
What he
I
said.
Don't know that much about politics. I just know that I don't live in Alabama anymore.
Okay.
Did you see upset. Did you see video from that sorry this is a unrelated but from that Richard Spencer appearance at Auburn the other night?
Yeah, yeah.
There
yeah.
was like the girl
I was just telling
him
Patrick
down.
About it. Yeah. yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So crazy. So sad. Poor Auburn. Anyway, okay.
Who you're very right. proud of.
When are you getting married, Katie?
August 12th.
All right, good
Wait,
date.
No, I shouldn't have said that on air. No stalkers, please.
In Rockport,
TBD
Maine.
Location.
In another town in Maine.
And your home address?
That's so, Maine, Oregon.
Sears
and your home address
Sears
and hours there?
Off. Pork and lobster is the theme?
Yep.
Well,
porchetta, lobster sliders.
I'll donate the pork.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, really?
It's on air.
It's on record.
It's on air.
I mean, you don't have more than like 300 guests coming, do you?
320.
Do you need someone to cook
yeah.
the
food?
Yeah.
What is this, a royal wedding? 300.
Gosh. Well, yeah, and I accept volunteers.
They can just have a pork station now. Yeah.
I know.
By the way,
well,
I will not come to your wedding.
For porchetta.
I will not
Why?
Come to your wedding. You should
what if
never,
I invite you?
You will never, you should never have to look out as you're getting married to somebody in the audience who's like, hey, could we have a meeting about the ring?
Patrick is like, he's like, I think you could have done that better in these 1,000 ways when you did your vows.
You could have done your wedding the Italian way.
Can you
the
use
Italian
some
way.
News, some serious news headlines in your speech to your future husband?
You know, so Chris is like not a super feelings guy, but he really wants us to write our own vows and for them to like go into great detail. And I'm like, you know how I'm going to just be like sobbing. Like, how am I going to recite
Why?
This thing? Because I've found ever since I turned like 25 every year, my feelings like multiply exponentially. And so now my feelings are just so big that I just can't like, I just can't contain them.
What's up? Aaron was a crier. Now a new executive director is a crier. I've never
I
seen you
know.
Cry.
The role
yes,
does
you have.
It to you.
You so have.
Okay,
I think
wait,
it's the location.
Wait, guys, I feel like we probably we, should talk to the person that's on the phone. We've been leaving him hanging a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, he's on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, we better talk to him.
I know.
420 Mike Edison.
Yeah.
He's unemployed. Don't worry.
Did
he's
you
got
know,
plenty of
did
time.
Did you know that Mike Edison is on employer. The Wikipedia page for 420?
Oh.
Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh!
420!
Oh my god, yes to the song! Best reference. Dazed and
awesome.
Confused.
That's
my
awesome.
Favorite movie. Now,
Mike used to get so stoned, he would forget to smoke. He would forget to smoke more pot. That's how stoned he would get. He would forget.
Mike Edison, welcome to the HRN Happy Hour. Welcome back. Thank you for
yes,
being
you
here
guys,
on this momentous day.
Very happy. Are you 420-ing it up over there?
No, but we had shots of tequila
days.
Before the show started.
You know, on my show, we tried a couple times to do a pot tasting, and the first time we got yelled at because there was a little bit too much smoke, and apparently the ventilation from the studio goes directly into the restaurant, into Roberta's. So the second time, I thought I'd get smart, so I asked Brandon, one of the owners of Roberta's, to join us for the
there
pot tasting because I figured if he was involved, there's no way we could get in trouble, and we still got yelled at.
One
Wait,
time,
who yelled at you?
Well, they were trying to clean up Roberta's one time. Just to spite Mike, who I wrote my book with, Carnivore's Manifesto, I once snuck him a chocolate that had pot in it, and I didn't tell him right before his show.
That was so uncool.
And it happened to be the episode.
It's so uncool to give someone a pot cookie without telling
them. He happened.
Yeah, that's, yeah, that's
we
a... That's
sitting,
a
no,
I mean,
Mike is different.
Giving me food when I'm hanging around
so
with you guys.
That happened.
That weird to get
yeah, that's a scumbag
like.
Move.
Mike, tell them what episode...
I like it, Patrick.
Mike, tell them what episode you were doing and why I did it. Your episode 10 minutes after you
well,
took that chocolate
that
was...
It was a crazy cat lady episode on my show Arts and Seizures, and we were talking about rescuing cats, and we invited some crazy cat rescue ladies on, and what I didn't know was they brought all these kittens with them. which breaks, like, you know, every health violation imaginable.
That's how I did it.
That's
you know,
kitten abuse.
Going to a restaurant, right? And I just kept getting more and more stoned. These kittens were just climbing all over me.
Are you like clam baking the kittens?
Wait, that sounds like heaven.
I had to do it to him for that episode.
Right.
You know, being stoned with all these kittens climbing over me.
That sounds like literally my heaven.
Best day ever.
Yeah, well, still pretty uncool, Patrick. Don't be giving anybody any pot cookies without telling them first.
Hey, Mike, can you just give our listeners who might not be familiar with your illustrious career trajectory a little bit of your qualifications as we're interviewing you today about 420? I saw an interview with you recently, and I saw Wikipedia today, but give us the quick overview.
Well, once upon a time in another life, I was the publisher and editor of High Times magazine, which is this sort of clownish pamphlet about smoking dope, what my grandmother used to call this dope brag. But yeah, I was the editor of High Times magazine, so I guess I'm pretty uniquely qualified to talk about it. And in my book, I Have Fun Everywhere I Go, which is a memoir and account of my sordid magazine career of sex and drugs. I talked a lot about 420, and somehow I became part of the official record. I know I'm on the Wikipedia page, which some people are not very happy about, but there's so much infighting among stoners that the Wikipedia page is locked. You can't edit it.
That's awesome.
So many people have gone into that page and tried to write stuff on it, and the Wiki police just finally had to shut it down.
You're in, man.
Wow.
So what is it? Tell us about weed. I mean, give us, I mean, if you will, a headline.
So Mike, what is weed? What even is weed?
What do we need to be thinking about weed today? It's about to get legalized, everything.
legalized. You know, 420. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like, do I really need to, like, a holiday to validate, like, my bad habits? I mean, it's just so silly. The guys at High Times were trying to say, well, 420 in the afternoon is when it should be socially, you know, okay to smoke pot. I'm like, well, how about after work? I think that's a little bit.
Yeah, why not 520?
You know, I mean, you guys, I mean, 420, but you guys also got stoned at 10 in the morning, and then you got stoned to get at noon. So 420 isn't that special anymore. You know, it's, you know.
Are you saying 420 is over?
420 is over. Well, today's 420. Oh,
you heard it here first.
I think it's okay. I think pot's worth celebrating. You know, I think it's okay.
So,
I think they should have a day to celebrate, like, you know, all my other vices, too.
Masturbation day. What would that be?
Right now. But I've been.
Okay.
Whatever
they are.
Like, literally being an open book, you know what I'm talking about.
On that note, I think we got to take a commercial break. Thank you, Mike. That was awesome. Happy 420.
Happy 420.
Thank you, Mike.
On masturbation.
Heritage Foods USA is a farm-to-table online butcher and founding sponsor of Heritage Radio Network.
Patrick Martins founded Heritage Foods USA in 2002 to save endangered species of livestock from extinction. He learned about the plight of endangered foods while working for Slow Food, a nonprofit started in 1986 in Italy when the first McDonald's opened on the Spanish steps of Rome. To counter the homogenizing effects of fast food, Slow Food was formed to bring attention to regional cuisines and ingredients.
By 2000, Patrick was the president of Slow Foods USA and working on adding heritage breeds to their arc of taste, but he decided to go further than a metaphorical arc and actually do something to preserve rare breeds.
That was the moment that Heritage Foods slogan, "Eat 'em to save 'em," was born. By creating a market for delicious meats from heritage breeds, we can ensure they'll be around for generations to come.
Plus, heritage breeds just taste a whole lot better. Learn more at heritagefoodsusa.com and use the code HERITAGERADIO for 2 free pork chops with your first order, brother.
All right, welcome back to HR and Happy Hour.
Love the ad. Thank you.
Yeah, that was me. That was me turning on my Alabama Southern accent, using my talents to benefit Heritage Foods USA, because we love you guys.
About time.
Just kidding. That's a true talent. But before the show started, during the show, you said you're no longer from Alabama.
I don't live there. I'm from there. Yeah, I'm.
But you kind of renounced, like, your rights to be proud of Alabama.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. I mean,
I think you can be from a place and still, like, kind of distance yourself from it.
That is exactly
being
right.
From Maine.
Yeah. No, Alabama just has, I mean, I talked about this, like, in another show about, like, how just, like, the government there right now is, like, basically imploding. But it's a great, it's like a
in
really
a good way, though, right?
Yeah. Like, people are getting out that need to get out, but
burn it down. rip it up and start again.
I guess. All right. So let's move on. We have our awesome guest in studio today, Mario Laposta from Babbo Pizzeria. And Mario, tell us a little bit about, you've only been in Boston for a few years.
Yep. We opened 2 years ago, actually last Saturday, the 15th of April.
And Mazel tov.
Yeah. Tell us about what that, because you've worked for other restaurants in that group before.
This is Mario Batali and Joe Bastianich's restaurant group, yes?
So I've been with Mario and Joe for roughly 9 years. And Babbo Pizzeria was a way to showcase wood-fired pizza, and then a combination of a lot of the restaurants where a lot of amazing things are happening, pasta, antipasti pizza, and also incorporate a lot of what was going on at their restaurant at Oto in New York City, bringing it to Boston. And, you know, Babbo Pizzeria was the name. And, yeah, it's been an awesome 2 years, a lot of hard work, but a lot of fun.
How did you first get into pizza?
It was kind of started as an obsession, really, since a young age, you know, traveling to Italy, even here, and nicknames like Mario Mozzarella, Mario Meatball, and
Can we call you Mario Meatball for the rest of the show?
Sure, why not? Yeah, pinching my cheeks from a very young age. People making fun of me, like, why do you love pizza so much? So it was kind of a natural transition, and decided at some point, a couple years after college, I was going to save up some money and move to Italy and learn how to make pizza, and that's what I did.
Whereabouts?
I was in Rome, and then a little bit north of Naples. Mm. Yeah.
That's where pizza was invented, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Best pizza comes from the south. Best food, really, in Italy, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You used to have a lot
of them's fighting words.
Oh.
Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo.
You still have a lot of family in Italy, right?
Yeah, my sister's been in Rome for about 20 years. She's moving back soon. Oh. And lots of aunts and uncles and cousins and just north of Naples. Yeah, mm. In the Campania region where the best mozzarella comes from in the world. Mm.
Yeah. Very cool. So, tell us a little bit more about this World Pizza Championship.
It's something I did in the beginning, and someone I worked for in Italy, you know, used to rave about it. He won it in the past, so I figured I'd give it a shot. It takes place in Parma, and, you know, by no means is there the best. There is the best pizzaiolos in the world there, but there's several pizzaiolos that are amazing that don't go there. So it's just really a competition, and it's a good experience. Get to meet people. You get to make one pizza. You have 10 minutes to make it. If it rips, if it sucks, it doesn't matter. That's the pizza that you're going to serve. And so it's just a fun experience. I've pretty much been terrible at it with the exception of 2 years, not because I don't make good pizza, just because it's a difficult competition. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It's a good reason to go over to Italy and eat some good food and make pizza.
Has an American ever won that competition?
I don't believe so, no.
Wow.
Now, how is speaking about acceptance and stuff, how has Boston reacted to a Batali and Bastianich restaurant? Because that doesn't seem like a city that a lot of restaurant groups open in, right, unless they're from
And there's
there.
A lot of Italian restaurants
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Well, Boston's definitely a city where local chefs and, you know, small restaurant groups are really accepted, and there's a tight-knit community. And I must say that those chefs and those restaurants have been super accepting and really supportive of us, but it's definitely been a difficult market to get into. Meaning, you know, I feel like the misconception is that we're a corporate restaurant, mm-hmm. when in actuality, yes, Mario and Joe's restaurants, there are quite a few of them, and we do fall under that corporate umbrella. However, all of Mario's restaurants are chef-driven and manager-driven, so there's people at the restaurant working their tails off day after day, working with people like Patrick, working with local farms, you know, really trying to make the restaurants great. And that's
also
why,
on the corporate level, yeah. they never went corporate. I mean, Mark Kosha runs that entire operation financially, and he was a dishwasher at Beko.
He's been with them since the beginning.
Wow.
But yeah, so the restaurants run themselves, and I think that's why Mario and Joe have been so successful, because they have these people in the restaurants working really hard to make them great. Mm-hmm. And you know, and with their tutelage, we're able to be even better, and you know, have their vast knowledge available to us. But yeah, so I would say that's the biggest misconception, is Mario and Joe are true restaurateurs that really care about what they're doing, and they have, you know, great chefs and great people running the restaurants for them. And that's the reason why they've expanded so much, not necessarily because it's Mario and Joe.
But Boston's a tough crowd. I mean, politically, I'm completely aligned with yeah. Boston. It's like the foundation of democracy, right. and the Democrats.
Yeah.
And yet they're like the most conservative liberals of all time. I mean, it's a tough yeah. crowd.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I live in Southie, so very blue collar. You know, no one likes their yuppies coming into town and taking over. But obviously over the years, it's become gentrified and, mm-hmm. you know, it's just an incredible area to live in. I love it. But it's a tough crowd. And if you're from out of city, they're really going to fight you until the end to accept you. And we're doing our best to do that. And I think we're winning some people over. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one more question since...
before the quiz.
Before the quiz.
Pizza quiz.
I have a question, too.
Yes. Okay. So can you give me... I'm going to Naples and Rome this summer. Okay. Give me, like, the... one place for each city that I have to go eat at.
It is pronounced Naples when you get there.
Naples?
Naples.
Not Naples.
I love being in the Naples.
Naples
yeah,
or Naples?
Yeah, just if you want to be a real insider.
I don't really, but okay.
Just kidding.
Don't drive in Naples. We already discussed this.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, come on. If you're good in New York, you'll be good there. Just keep your line.
I don't drive in New York.
New York drivers have nothing on drivers from Naples. My wife had her hands on the roof praying that we didn't die as we pulled into the city. 3 hours in, she was like, can we go back to Rome?
That's hilarious.
Well, I thought Roman drivers were scary.
I would say you have to go to Pizzeria Don Michele because it's just a classic, right? It's like...
Where is it?
It's...
Just downtown?
It's just on the outskirts of Spaccanopoli, I believe.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's kind of on where the ships come in and everything. Mm. Anyway, so it's Antica Pizzeria Don Michele. It's been there since like 1876. Mm. So they didn't invent the margarita or anything, but they serve the margarita, the marinara. And there's just something that's just incredible about the pizza. The oven's been burning for over 100 years.
Wow.
And it's just amazing. I love it. And then in Rome, I told you about this. There's an amazing, amazing seafood restaurant called Il Piemontese. €30, 20, 30 courses seafood.
What?
Vino, wine, red, white, limoncello, anything
what?
You want
what
on the table.
What a funny name for a Roman restaurant, yeah. A region to the north.
Exactly, right? And it's just amazing. So if you want to... I'll let you know where it is, but it's just
yes,
phenomenal.
Please.
You definitely have to go there.
Oh I'm so excited.
Yeah, I dream about it daily.
This is for your honeymoon?
This is for my cousins are getting married. My cousin's getting married in Assisi, and we're making a vacation.
So it's an indirect honeymoon.
Yeah.
Sure.
What's your question, Katie?
My question is, is it true that you're a dual citizen, Italy, U.S.?
I am.
How do I get that?
Well, my father was born in Italy, so I think that from a young age, he went to the Italian consulate and mm-hmm. basically became dual citizens. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So, like, if I wanted to do it, I would have to petition the consulate to say, please, please.
Are you Italian?
No, but there's this house that I really want to buy.
Can you buy property without actually being a citizen?
I don't know, but I have a lot of questions about it.
Katie wants to have an under the Tuscan sun kind of life.
No. There's this house. I've been staying in it for a couple years in Orvieto, and I really want to buy it.
Wow. Patrick, you spent some time in Italy, right?
I did. I lived in Piemonte. They say about the Piemontese that they're false e cortese. A little cold, but courteous.
Right.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's a cold area. It's where Barolo and Barbaresco, the Nebbiolo grape thrives there. I lived in Bra, which is where Slow Food was founded. It's near Alba, the truffle capital of the world. So, yeah, very interesting people, very smart, you know, very indoors, you know, almost the opposite of Sicily, where everyone's outdoors
right.
and all
right.
that. But I did want to ask, before we get to this quiz and we see how legitimate your knowledge is really about your field.
Well,
although I hope
depends
you ask
on the questions. Really.
I know. Last week she asked questions that had nothing to do about gardens to a garden person, but... because Katie wasn't here to berate, to pull it in the.
That's me, order. Chief berater of HRN.
Is it true you never went to culinary school and you're in charge of like one of Boston's most important restaurants? Are you a big advocate of tell with school, just learn through the school of hard knocks?
I don't really. I wouldn't say that I'm an advocate for that. I definitely didn't go to culinary school. It just. Something that was kind of ingrained in me from a young age, the passion inside of cooking and, you know, really getting in touch with, you know, where, you know, recipes my grandmother used and my mom was this incredible cook. So, you know, I was always fascinated with food and fascinated with pizza. And I would say that if you don't go to culinary school, be ready to work really hard because that's what I did. And, you know, it paid off. But really, truth must be told, I started as a pizzaiolo with the company, and they kind of turned me into this chef reluctantly. But, no, I love it. But really, pizza is my passion, and you know, that's what I love to do. And just try to, you know, cook from the heart and teach my cooks to cook with love. And I know it sounds cliche, but that's, you know, I feel like how I make good food. And I don't really know any other way because I wasn't classically trained.
You're the pie guy.
I'm the pie guy.
It's the Italian way.
All right.
Mario Meatball.
Drumbro, what's our quiz?
Okay. Our quiz is about pizza. Really?
Pizza.
All right.
Do we have quiz music, David?
Let me see if I can pull that up, Patrick.
This is,
can I say
let's
one
make
thing?
It stressful.
Yeah.
You can
Patrick,
say so
you would
things.
Appreciate this.
Yes.
So
you know, in connection with Heritage Food. Did you have something to do with Slow Food in the beginning?
Early on.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
Back at Terry Lodge in Westport, we actually received the stamp of approval.
Oh. For, yeah. Ooh, mazel tov.
That's awesome.
But we're working with this flour company called Central Milling. They're based out of Logan, Utah. And we've kind of gone away from, like, the commercial Neapolitan flour, Double Zero.
Good.
And we've developed our own pizza flour. And, you know.
It is important. It's amazing that how much pizza flour and pasta is actually imported from Italy when here we have all the ingredients. Half the ingredients go from here to there and then back.
Right. That's they source it. And now we're getting it, you know, directly from the farmers. And really the grains are 2 weeks off the farm. Mm-hmm. And it's made a world of difference in our pizza. And we're also using Chris Bianco and the DiNapoli family's Bianco di Napoli tomatoes.
Chris Bianco. He's the king. You must look up to that guy.
He's amazing. They're the best tomatoes I've ever had in my life.
Wow. Yeah. Good but for anyway. You. Good for you. Breaking trends.
Yeah. I'm craving, by I'm craving pizza.
I'm so hungry.
I want a pizza. Yeah, we're your, actually. What do you think of the Roberta's pizza?
I think it's awesome. Yeah. Honestly, I was the first time
we had lunch here once.
The first time you took me here, I was skeptical, but I was really impressed with the quality of the pizza. I think it's awesome.
Good answer.
Nice. All right. Correct. Love you, Roberta's. Okay, ready?
So now we like you, but are you good at your craft? Okay. We will determine.
Here's the trivia.
Through some arbitrary
this
questions.
Is it.
All right. Question number one. What month is National Pizza Month?
Oh, everyone should know this.
No clue. January.
Oh.
Try again. Try
October.
Again.
October. Oh. I knew that.
What was the name of the first pizzeria opened in Naples in 1738?
1738.
1738.
Oh, my God. It wasn't Pizzeria Brandy, right?
No.
Tell me.
An Antica Pizzeria?
Oh, you said that even.
Yeah.
Who did Pizza Hut deliver pizza to in 2001 as a publicity stunt?
Patrick Martins.
Prince.
Donald Trump.
Think like
oh,
out, think like out of this world.
Oh,
Larry Bird. Literally.
The moon. Someone on the moon. Space station.
E.T.
Yeah, yes! You got it.
Patrick is so weirdly good at trivia. It's like not
Patrick's
right.
Secretly Wait, a genius.
I have to do my conflict of interest disclosure here.
My question my future, is...
Wait.
Yeah.
My future brother-in-law is the naked guy from the Naked Guy Pizza Hut ad.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen that.
My question is, did they maintain their half-hour delivery service commitment?
No, it took a long time.
Oh. So they probably got it for free.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Next question. During what week is the most pizza consumed in the U.S.?
Give you a hint. It takes place during a major event.
Dun, dun, da, 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 da.
Spring break.
And not really a holiday.
Da, 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 da.
Possibly a sporting da, 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 event.
Super Bowl week.
You got it, David.
What? David? Oh, I didn't know you were playing.
Me either.
Is that, okay. Is that the NBC, NFL always on playing. NBC?
Dun, dun, da, da, da. NBC, yes.
I don't know. Yeah. All right, next question.
If you said the Carrie Underwood song, I would have known it.
Oh, You're right. Sunday Night Watcher.
Focus, Patrick.
According to legend, what is the significance of the toppings on a margarita pizza?
The colors of the Italian flag.
That's right.
Oh, that was the most important question to answer.
In 1889, pizza maker Raffaele Esposito created the pizza margarita, garnished with tomatoes, mozzarella, and basil to represent the national colors of Italy as on the Italian flag to honor the queen consort of Italy, Margarita of Savoy.
Correct.
History lesson.
And is that a question?
If me and my wife ever have a daughter, we're going to name her Margarita.
Really?
Or Marina, and really? We'll call her Mighty Nada.
That's so cute. Okay, last question.
Okay.
Nino's Pizza in NYC sells, in New York, sells a $1,000 pizza.
Thanks for the clarification.
With four, I was like, what? I was like, why did I write NYC? I never said that.
That's where we live.
Okay, Nino's Pizza sells a $1,000 pizza with four luxury ingredients. Can you name the four?
Or name one of the four.
I've never heard of Nino's
Smugness.
Pizza.
Is Smugness one of them?
It's very gimmicky.
I'd like to dispute the luxury status of two of these items.
Luxury status ingredients.
Well, yeah.
Gold?
No.
Gold flakes? No.
No, that's the $1,000 burger, answer. Though.
You're on the right track.
Isn't that, yeah.
False sense of superiority?
You gotta pay extra for that.
Or inferiority complex.
So basically, I know nothing about pizza, correct?
No,
No.
Clearly, these questions were like not that.
Baby, okay, baby whale, killer whale fetus. No. killer whale pepperoni. Liver fetus.
I'm going to give you a hint. They're super cliche.
Anchovies. Yes.
No.
Pepperoni.
No.
I'll give you two. Truffle. You probably guess the rest. Cream
panda
fresh
bear
and chives.
Heart. Panda bear heart.
Okay.
Caviar.
Yes.
What's the other one? What's the most like cliche
truffle.
Luxury ingredient?
Seafood.
I'm from Maine, so take that lobster? As you will.
Yes, you got
blue
it.
Blue whale fin.
That's it. Boom. That's not good.
Caviar, that's lobster, creme fraiche, and chives. That's not that special.
Will you
and
name
also, a dollar?
And
no
also
way.
Doesn't sound good.
In yeah. honor of this show, will you name a pizza the Katie Rita? On the day she gets married, just a special yes. at Babbo.
Really?
The caterita.
Yes.
If I can
so
cook the pork,
it have,
it'll be a hippie pizza with moule manier
and lots of mushrooms.
Really quick, we're not just, you know, we are a pizzeria in Boston. However, June 8th, we'll be doing a dinner with Heritage Foods.
Oh, woo-hoo! Yes. We're going to have all of Boston that's going to show up.
We're going to have a lot of Boston there.
There are going to be more New England Patriots at that dinner than they were at the Trump celebration.
Oh, Good one.
I'm a Cowboys fan, Patrick.
All right, good.
Oh.
A
really?
Nice bastion yes. of democracy down yeah. there, too.
They'll be available on our website, so plenty of pork for okay. everybody.
Awesome. What's your website?
BaboPizzeria.com.
Instagram?
Babbo Boston.
Thanks all for right. supporting endangered breeds of livestock. We got to eat them to save them, and your restaurant does so much for all those family farms out in the Midwest, so good job.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you, and thanks for being with Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported, nonprofit, 501c3. Please go to Heritage Radio
we
Network.
We could not be more needy.
We have needs.
Help us.
Help us with our needs. HeritageRadio.org/donate. This is a serious thing here. We're doing a serious thing. Really, we need your help to survive and keep putting our voices out there. We're talking about expanding diversity, equity, sustainability, deliciousness in the food system. So please support us, heritageradio.org. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Heritage Radio Network Happy Hour. Thank you to our guests, Cynthia, Mario, Patrick, and my co-host, Kat, our engineer, David. Thanks, y'all, for listening.
Bye.
See you next week.
For listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.